Today on Rambling About Cars, we've got a 2025 Subaru Forester. We've got an old GT40 road car restored by Ruff. That's interesting. We've got a very cool roof, Ruff. I call it Ruff, man. It's been Ruff ever since I played it in the old PS1 games way back in the day. What else we've got? We've got the Cheap Car Challenge. We've got some GM commercial talk. We've got all kinds of stuff on this Thanksgiving Eve in America. So let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Mr. Chris Bruce is across the way. I forgot to mention, if you like more engine destruction, we've got more engine destruction for you. That's turning out to be rather interesting.
Yeah. For the folks that visit Motor One love these videos. They just eat them up every week. And as long as that's happening, I guess we're going to talk about them. It's kind of a complicated thing because I write about them and they do fantastic traffic for us. I don't always understand why other people are interested, though, if I'm being totally honest.
Oh my God, dude. Just the mechanical calamities. Yes, yeah. I'm here for it. I've seen some of these videos in the past. I have destroyed car parts behind me on camera. If you can kind of look back there in that little area, I had them on the podcast last week. So I don't even think you have to be super into cars or have much mechanical knowledge to be interested in an engine block with multiple holes in it. Unintended, I should point out, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Hand-sized holes.
But yeah, Ramblers, welcome. If you are new to the broadcast and you're like, hey, what's this all about? You're catching us on Motor One.com Facebook, Motor One.com on Twitter. Sorry, Motor One.com on X. It's always going to be Twitter. Let's be honest.
It's Twitter. No one calls it X. No one's ever going to call it X. X makes no sense. It's Twitter.
X does not mark the spot. You can also catch us Motor One on YouTube. And if you're catching us live here Wednesday, 7:30 p.m., you can chat with us live right now on those platforms. Just type in the comment section anything on your mind. Keep it PG related because we try to be a family show. It comes into our command central here. Yeah. Bruce and I can see it. We can respond in kind, and we love to respond. So wherever you're catching us there, joining. And if you're still an audio listener, we still love, love, love our audio listeners. We go up Rambling About Cars every Friday around 9, 10 a.m. Eastern time. You catch us on Spotify, Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Amazon. It's been a while since I said it, so I'll say it. Deezer. You can catch us on all kinds of platforms.
It's coming.
And always, so, you can email us Motor One podcast at MotorOne.com. I'm getting a little ahead of myself there.
Yep. So two things. First off, Gion WCS gives us a heart emoji. Gion, I don't believe you've commented before, and we always like calling out our first time commenters. So thank you for that. And then Vampire Bear 13, who is a frequent commenter, he says that he is Mark from Bucyrus. I say Bucyrus because is that Bucyrus, Ohio? Because that's I know of that town. It's not too far away from where my parents live. So
does everybody in Ohio know everybody else?
No,
because I've always being north of you in Michigan, I always had that impression that Ohio was kind of this friendly place where everybody knew pretty much everybody else. It's like you can name some weird obscure town and I drove through there like a couple years ago. How's your mom? You know, like
no, Ohio it very much has a thing with Texas where every town in Ohio is not pronounced the way it should be pronounced, much like every town in Texas is pronounced not like it should be pronounced. So when you know the pronunciation, it's clear that you're from there.
Yep. I know what you mean. There are some places in Michigan like that. There are some places that were in South Dakota like that, like the capital of Pierre. It's not Pierre. It's Pierre.
Okay.
Even though that's how you would know, okay, you're not from here, are you? So,
my favorite, a nearby town from where I grew up, is spelled, and I'm going to spell it out here, and I want the listeners to think, how would you pronounce that? Manitua. Six letters, Manitua. Smith, how would you pronounce that?
Dude, I would rather do math on, you know, live than try to do pronunciations. M-A-N-T-U-A, Mantua.
That makes total sense. No, if you are from there, you would know it is pronounced Manaway.
Manaway, well, that's fair.
No, it's not fair. There, the entire letters fair. Yeah, man, look, man. Thank you, Vampire Bear. Manaway is how it's pronounced. He knows. He is from the area.
There's a place in southern Michigan, and I should know it. And for some reason, it's completely vacating my mind right now, where it's like you pronounce it like this, but that's not how you are supposed to. That's not how you would normally pronounce it. Why can't I think of it? Charlotte. Yes. Okay. Yes. There's Charlotte, Michigan. It's not Charlotte. It's Charlotte.
Yeah. It's just one of those things that if you're from, it's clear that you're from the area if you know how to pronounce it. And it's just always fun.
Rambling about pronunciation. How do you pronounce
pound names?
How do you pronounce Subar? Subaru.
That's there we go. Thank you
Subu, for that. Subaru. What a terrible segue, because we're going to talk about something
pretty good segue.
Don't encourage me. I need less of that. We couldn't talk about this last week on the podcast because it was debuting, I think, the next day for the LA Auto Show. Of course, it's the 2025 Subaru Forester. It was teased ahead of time, although Subaru didn't come right out and say, hey, we're going to have a new Forester. It was pretty much assumed that there was going to be a new Forester. This is a new generation for the Forester. It's a little bit bigger, obviously. The styling is all new under the hood.
Is
not
it
really? The styling not really quite.
Is not all new. It
not
it
not, looks not
a
really
a lot like the current one.
There's some similarities. Senior editor Brett Evans at Motor One wrote up our debut, and he actually did a really good video. Yeah. He spent some time with Subaru, so you definitely want to go to Motor One, check that out. He points out there's a little bit of like that old school first gen flavor, I think, from like the top half up. And speaking as an owner of one of those early Subaru Foresters, I wholeheartedly agree. I see some similarity there. Pop the hood. You're going to see more similarity. Guess what you're going to see? A 2.5 liter flat four cylinder. It's pretty much the same as it's always been. 180 horsepower in this application, which is actually a little bit less, I think, than the outgoing model, but yep, torque
lost 2 horsepower and 2 pound-feet. Oh no, sorry, it gained 2 pound-feet of torque.
It lost 2 horsepower, so it's at 180 horsepower. Gained 2 pound-feet of torque, 178 pound-feet. It goes through a CVT. Of course, it's got all-wheel drive. That's something I want to talk about a little bit later. Remind me, Bruce, because I have maybe a little bit of a rambling rant there. I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes.
I'm ready for that.
But yeah, so all-wheel drive, Subaru, you know the routine here. Launches with base, premium, sport, limited, and touring trims. No mention of a new Subaru Forester Wilderness yet.
Right.
But give it time. It seems kind of obvious to me that it'll come out eventually.
I'm going to interrupt you here because I'm curious how you feel about this. I think it's a bummer that they haven't offered the turbocharged engine in the Forester for a little while. I think, this is my opinion, I think they do it to separate it from the Outback, which is available with the turbo, but I really wish you could get a Forester with the turbo. Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's been a while. I would love to see the demographics, and I'm sure Subaru has all kinds of data on their buyers for the Forester. I would be willing to bet most aren't really that interested in having a bunch more horsepower. 180 horsepower is nothing big to write home about, but
it's fine. But
I have the impression that most buyers that's all they want. They're more interested in the styling, I think, the all-wheel drive, just sort of that whole Subaru vibe.
Okay.
And I don't know. And, because, and, well, I mean, you own a Subaru, and I own a Subaru.
I own two Subarus.
Do you get the same kind of sense that I do? I mean, you have an Outback and I have a Forester.
Right. I've got a naturally aspirated Outback and a turbocharged Outback. And I got to say, my wife's daily driver is the turbocharged Outback. That turbo makes a world of difference. And
does it make a world of difference to her?
Yes. She loves merging onto the freeway. She just plants her foot and she loves it.
Okay. That's fair.
It's true. it's interesting. And as we're going through these images, it's fascinating to me because we have a newer Outback. The instrument cluster and the infotainment screen, I am pretty sure, are the exact same stuff out of our Outback. It looks identical. They look like identical pieces. So
yeah, I mean that's worth pointing out. Obviously, the interior is updated. That's an 11.6 inch vertically oriented touchscreen that you can get in the Outback. But the lower trim levels, as I understand, there are a pair of smaller 7-inch screens in there.
Yep. We've seen that in other Subarus. Yeah.
Yep. It still rides on the company's global modular platform. But this does have like an inner frame structure. Subaru says when you tie it all together, it has 10% more rigidity. Have you noticed Subaru loves just kind of plugging in some of these abstract percentages, like, okay, 10% more than what?
Right. We kind of had this discussion at work, you know, in our chat last week regarding the Camry, the fact that it rides on the same platform as the current vehicle, but there's a lot of updates to it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of sort of get that same impression from the new Forester, where it's still riding on the same platform, but they've kind of improved everything around it. And I think when that happens, sometimes automakers have to, how can I say this nicely? You know, they have to get creative with the things that they're touting. And
for sure,
I wonder if we're getting a little bit of that here.
I'm sure. I mean, you have to, I mean, it is very different from the outgoing vehicle. Obviously, you want to try to convince people that have the current model, here's why you need to get the new one. I mean, it is pretty spacious inside. Subaru says there's 29.6 cubic feet of space at the back. And if you fold down the seats, it goes up to 74.4. We talked about the different trim levels. It does come with Subaru EyeSight, all their driver safety assists, standard, not all of them. I mean, there are certain things like the automatic emergency steering, things of that nature, that are optional, but you do get the basic EyeSight package as standard.
The tech's available.
Yeah, the tech's all available. We don't have any pricing information yet. We can tell you the current model starts just under 30, so it's safe to assume that this is going to be a little bit more. It goes on sale in the US anyways in the spring of 2024.
And I will say, we cover, you know, automaker sales every month. And when you look at Subaru sales, it depends on the month, but it's been this way for years and years and years now. Either the Outback or the Forester is the best-selling month model, depending on the month. And they just kind of trade back and forth. It's, you know, those are Subaru's two top-selling vehicles. And, you know, I guess they decided for this updated generation not to kind of rock the boat too much. That it definitely has an improved interior. You know, it's got, the styling is to me really similar. You know, powertrain upgrades are minimal. I kind of wish they offered the turbo, but they don't want to, and that's up to them. Maybe they know more things about the demographics than I do. But yeah, there's nothing about this I look at and they say, and I think that, you know, they're not going to be able to sell just as many of these updated models as they do the current one. It's still going to be a strong seller for them.
I feel like they are leaving considerable, what's the term here? They are presenting this not as a blank canvas, but in such a manner that I get the impression we can do much more with this in the next year or the next 2 years if we want to put out special edition models. I mean, just as you look at the front, when you see what looks like those fake corner vents in the fascia that look like ideal cutouts for some big fog lights or something. I don't know if that's offered on other trims. I've only seen the photos that we have here, which I think are the touring and possibly the sport trim. I know one of them is the touring, but they both have those just those kind of trapezoid shaped openings, but they're not really openings. There's just panels in there. It's like, well, okay, it looks like something can fit in there pretty obviously. You know, what's that design for? What's good. That style for? Yeah, there's a good look there.
There you
of course,
go.
It's got that big grill that that kind of pulls from the Ascent, the Subaru Ascent a little bit. It has those, I'm just going to say it. It has those stupid wheel arches that are just squared off. They're kind of borrowed from the WRX, it looks like. I don't like them there. I really don't like them here. I think this looks really good from like the belt line up or like midway up, but then midway down, I'm just not there for it. Those wheel arches look ridiculous with the fairly low profile tires on that vehicle. I wanted to put up, and I wanted to mention Ted Adam Green, regular commenter, wonderful rambler. Comment says, Subaru's motto is practicality. We'll get you there, not zoom, zoom. There's some truth there because, what was it, a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had a long weekend, and I took my Forester on, it was about, 250 miles away. Come out of the movie theater that I was at, and hey, what's that weird squealing noise? The belt squealing again. I'm 250 miles from home. It was halfway off. You drove
250 miles to see a movie?
I was doing more than movie stuff.
Okay.
It was just
a little better.
Like a quick little weekend vacation.
Like a mountain man that you live like out. Like so far, like I have to drive 200 miles to see a movie.
No, I've got a decent movie theater about 10 miles away. Okay. But I wanted to get down to Grand Rapids, do a few other things, while at the same time going to see the Marvels in like a legit nice theater. There's the Phoenix Theater over at Woodland Mall in Grand Rapids. It's had a wonderful modernization in recent years. Ticket prices are $10. For regular seating, and the regular seats are the large heated power reclining seats assigned for each person. So a little plug for the theater. If you want to send me some tickets, you can just email podcast@motorone.com and we can talk. But no, there it was like 10 PM on a Friday night, the belt squealing away. I open up the hood. Oh, look, it's half off the crank pulley. That's nice. But still got me back home. I took it easy, went and got some wrenches, tightened things back up a little bit, moved it around. So thank you, Subaru. No thanks to whoever made that belt, but so far, so good. But that's sort of my take on the styling. Bruce, I mean, what do you think about the styling on this?
I'd like to hear you. I agree with you. I do see cues from earlier generations of the Forester, but also... you know, Subaru, for what it's worth, they've never been a company that does revolutionary styling changes from, model year to from generation to generation. It's just not something the company does whenever you look at their vehicles. And so expecting that from them is kind of a fool's errand in a certain way, but still this just looks a lot like the current one to me, but that's fine.
And Subaru, if you're listening, get rid of those chunky wheel arches. They look kind of ridiculous here. I think a standard half moon wheel arch would work really good on this. There's a lot of wheel gap in there, but I suspect that's by design because there's certainly plenty of room to put a much beefier all-terrain tire in there like you might get on, a Forester Wilderness. Total speculation there. And just my little rant here before we go on, as I was going through I was going through the Forrester post there, just going through all the pictures. And of course, we've got the big, I think it's like the symmetrical all-wheel drive badging. Are we at a point where we can get rid of all-wheel drive badging? I mean, have we reached a point where it's the rare exception now that you have a modestly sized crossover or SUV that doesn't have all-wheel drive? I feel like it's putting a V8 badge on a vehicle or engine. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just in a grumpy ass mood today.
But well, I'm sure looking you through remember it. Back in the 80s when you used to see like dual overhead cams.
It was a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal. But now it's just like, oh look, all-wheel drive. Wow, an all-wheel drive crossover. That's nobody's ever done that before. Back in the day when it was still pretty new, where you didn't have many vehicles plugging all-wheel drive, sure. Now, do we need to advertise it just all over the place? Because those badges, I mean, it's not just like a little badge stuck on a gate. They work it in as like part of the styling thing. And it's just like, Subaru, you've been doing all-wheel drive for 40 years. I mean, it just stuck out to me as just, it was one of those why moments. Like, why? Symmetrical all-wheel drive. Okay. I'm happy that the left front wheel isn't spinning faster than the right rear while I'm going in a straight line, I guess.
Smith, can I be really tacky, for lack of a better word, real quick here?
Because go for it.
What you're saying here, it brings something to my mind. Badges. We don't need no stinking badges.
I don't, maybe I'm just badge tired this week. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But I mean, enough. Obviously, I mean, it's maybe this stuck out to me because it was like, well, that's not just a general AWD badge or an all-wheel drive badge that's just stuck on a gate that's specifically designed to go into the D-pillar of the 2025 Subaru Forester. So that's part of this specific vehicle's design language. And I'm sorry, if it was 1995 or even 2005, okay, make a big deal out of that. 2025, oh my God, you have a crossover SUV with all-wheel drive. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a little grumpy. I need some turkey. Grumpy,
but you're also convincing me that I hadn't thought about it before, but yeah, you might actually have a good point there. That maybe, I mean, for a while, there was Subaru's tagline was the beauty of all-wheel drive. They would
right
talked about that forever, but they've done it for so long that I wonder if there's a consumer out there that doesn't conflate Subarus and all-wheel drive. So maybe, yeah, I don't know.
And to be fair, Subaru has done this for a long time. They are synonymous with all-wheel drive. So in that respect, and now I'm flipping in the opposite direction and arguing with myself at the moment here. Okay, this is like part of Subaru's heritage. Maybe they should be making a special deal about it. Maybe this is absolutely appropriate. Welcome to the world of my brain, everybody.
I think it's time to change topics. I think we have to get your brain off of all-wheel drive and talk about something that's not all-wheel drive. That's very, very, very not all-wheel drive, in fact. So we found out end of last week, this popped up. This is a Ford GT40 road car.
Like old school, not like Ford GT, you know, first gen from the 90s or the, this is an original GT40.
Yes, this is, yes. Did I write it? Did I not put the model year in the story? I did put the model year. 1966 specifically. Yep.
1966.
And what
they made. This- yeah, I was going to say they did make some road going versions. Very, very few. This is, I think, one of 30, Bruce.
So yes, I was. Thank you for prompting me. They made 30 Mark One GT40 road cars, and then they made, I think, a few more Mark Three GT40 road cars. And by a few more, I think they made like
5 or 10
of those.
I thought there were even fewer. I would have to look it back up.
There are fewer than 100 total GT40 road cars out there.
And they were very much, I mean, they weren't like the 2005 when it came out. These were very much, okay, we have a race car. Let's put a couple things in the race car that might make it sort of okay for the road. I mean, these weren't designed to
I will be addressing that here in just a moment because the interior is, let's just do it right now. I'm going to skip to the interior photos because the interior is fascinating because
it's right-hand drive. It's right-hand drive, but.
And right-hand shift, by the way.
It's still right-hand shift. Yeah.
The gear shift. And this was something they changed on the Mark III GT40 road cars. The Mark IIIs have the gear shift in the middle of the car, like you would expect. The Mark Ones, though, they only came in right-hand drive, and the gear shift is to the right of the driver. So if you're getting in, you have to not only climb in over the side sill, you have to climb in over the gear shifter as well. And we're looking at that here. But what I wanted to point out is that these were very, very clearly race cars first and road cars second. Because if you're looking at this here, and I'm going to zoom in, so right behind the steering wheel, if you're watching on MotorOne.com, I'm going to try to describe this as best as possible for the audio listeners, but if you're watching right now, you'll be able to see this. Right behind the steering wheel, you have the tachometer. You also have oil temperature and coolant temperature. Makes sense for a race car. But if you're looking on MotorOne.com right now, if you look way to the left of the driver,
that's the speedometer.
It's practically in the passenger seat, essentially. It's way over there because it's a race car. You don't need a speedometer on a race car. So they kind of just, we're going to put it over there. And it's hilarious to look at.
And also very 60s and just very cool. It's such a treat to see these cars, especially to see one of the road cars. And this one is for sale. It's going to go up for auction, early next year, I think, through Mecum. Is that correct, Bruce?
Yeah, Mecum will have it's going to be at their Kissimmee sale, and that runs from January 2nd to the 14th, I believe.
Okay.
Let me confirm those dates. Yeah, January 2nd through the 14th.
Very prominent auction. Mecum doesn't offer any sort of estimate, but Vampire Bear, thanks for coming in here. Vampire Bear says legendary motor car sold a Mark One GT40 for $6 million a few years ago, a road car. We're talking about a very valuable car here. You don't see them come up every day. We wanted to write this up just to share this because it's an amazing car. But you, in the process, Bruce, stumbled upon I think something extremely interesting.
So for our folks out there, our car fans. And you might be familiar with Roof.
Roof.
Yes, Roof. They are generally a Porsche modifying, restoring company. If you ever heard of like the CTR Yellowbird is kind of their most famous model, because back in the 80s, it would do 200 miles an hour when basically no car would do 200 miles an hour. And it was a modified 911, a heavily modified 911, but still. And in writing up the story, there was a single line in the listing that Roof restored this car. And that kind of piqued our attention because, well, Roof doesn't work on Fords. They work on Porsches, don't they? And so it took several days and multiple emails and stuff like that. But we finally found out and we got this quote from Roof. Roof did indeed restore that GT40 back in 1996 for a special client of ours. In fact, they restored several of his cars. Though it is pretty rare, Roof is able to restore cars outside of outside of the Porsche realm if a client requests. So
yeah,
that's the confirmation right there. This was restored in 1990. This is a roof GT40, which
a roof restored,
the only one in the world.
It's GT40. Well, that I mean, that's when I first saw that, I thought, okay, there has to be only one roof, right? I mean, there isn't going to be like another one somewhere, or is that like a family member that created their own business that's using the same name? But you know, that was what we wanted to find out, because I mean, Bruce, you and I have been in this business for decades.
Decades,
certainly. I even was a guest author on a Ford GT book, and I didn't know that Roof did this. So I'm not saying I'm a repository of all GT40 knowledge, but I was floored to learn something new about this. So yeah, I think it's extraordinarily interesting.
You know, it's this one, it's got to be this. Yeah, I can't imagine if they made 30 road cars that, you know, Roof has restored all, you know, a bunch of them. So it's this one car, this one owner clearly has a very good relationship with the company since they've restored all of his cars, apparently. And so, yeah, it just makes the car even more interesting in that way. And we're looking, if you're watching on YouTube, we're looking at the engine right now, and it is gorgeous. It is a 289.
I think Group FBC is looking at the engine too. Trumpets. Oh my, the intake trumpets.
Yes, it is a 289 Ford V8, but it's got Weber carburetors with those gorgeous trumpets. And then it's got this gorgeous exhaust setup. You know, it kind of, it just looks like snakes. It looks like a, mm-hmm. you know, like things well fitted together. It's so gorgeous. It's, yeah, you know, whoever buys this car, I hope they enjoy it. Like, I really hope that they put it on the road and like drive it once rather than just putting it in a garage, because everything about this car is just so special and so interesting.
It looks great. I love the color of this. Vampire Bear, I think you had mentioned the other car that went at auction was red. I feel like I see a lot of red GT40s. I don't see enough blue. This one, if I had lots of money to spare, I'd be thinking about it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I will say, it as if it's not special enough, one of the previous owners was a person by the name of Umberto Magnoli. And he was a factory Ferrari Formula One driver in the early 1950s. I believe he raced from 53 to 56 for the Ferrari squad. It was something like that. Basically early 50s, not, you know, not super long. He didn't have a huge career in F1, but he did have a career in racing. He, you know, raced at the Nürburgring, raced at Sebring, raced at all these places, and he was a former owner of this car. So just it between the provenance and just how freaking gorgeous it is and stuff like that, it's a really cool car to come up for auction, so it's worth mentioning.
No, very nice. I'm trying to think of a segue, and the only segue I've got here is just from one Ford to another.
I guess, but
we're going in a completely different direction here from a gorgeous Ford GT40 with a gorgeous engine to a gourd engine, maybe. Okay. Dare I say that was all right?
You got there.
That was fair. Of course, for the last few weeks, we've been taking a look at videos from the YouTube channel I Do Cars. Yes. He does a fantastic breakdown.
He is a fantastic YouTuber. I think, honestly, we should get him on the show, just given the fact.
I was thinking about that this afternoon. Yep.
How popular his videos do on our site. And just if you watch the videos, he's very, very personable, but also, you know, his videos do fantastic traffic for us too when we write about them. So
I mean, he starts with an engine
plus win.
Yeah. Starts with an engine. Presumably something wrong with the engine. He just takes it apart bit by bit. The way he presents it, if you've never touched an engine in your life, you feel like you could go out and repair your SUV in the garage, I will recommend that you don't just try to do that because he obviously has considerable experience, but I mean, that's a credit to his style. He just presents it. You walk through the procedures. He talks about what he sees. And in this instance, he's tearing down a Ford 3.5 liter EcoBoost V6. There wasn't really any mystery as to exactly what was wrong because there were three visible holes already in the block before he even started taking anything apart.
Yes. In fact, the holes on one side, I'm going to skip forward here, are large enough for him to fit his hand in. So big holes in the side of an engine block, it tells you things are wrong. Those aren't supposed to be there. That's generally not supposed to happen. But the teardown is fascinating. So, you know, he obviously starts by taking the parts apart and things like that. But I'm just going to skip forward here in the video to where things get truly fascinating, because one of the pistons is missing.
And yeah, I mean, it's not like, oh, wow, there's you know, you can see where this piece broke off of the piston. It's like, the heads come off and there's just the cylinder. There's nothing in it.
Yeah.
It's
just gone.
There's nothing in it. And of course, later on, once we get the oil pan off, you see just carnage. It looks like somebody tipped over a bag of popcorn at the movie theater. If you've ever seen the pile of popcorn on the floor at a movie theater, that's what it looks like in this oil pan, only it's not yellow and buttery delicious. It's like metallic and blasted apart. There's some significant carnage here. Again, it's a 3.5 liter EcoBoost V6. Was said to have, 200,000 miles on it, Bruce? Came from
200,000-ish miles. But yeah,
came from a 2012 F-150.
Yep, you can see two of the pistons are there, and then he's going to zoom in. One of them's just gone. He doesn't really know. He's like, I'm going to shine a light on this one. I'm going to shine a light on this one. And then...
He does his little tap test, you know, with a hammer. It's like, okay, let's check this one. And then in the third hole, it's just like, yeah, that's now a holder for the hammer because there's nothing in there. But I mean, it's worth pointing out there was some damage on other pistons. There was some damage that was showing up on other pistons. They were at least still there. That particular one, just gone. That cylinder was just torn apart, gored to death. Connecting rod. When he took the oil pan off, I mean, he's finding what he calls piston nuggets, which I think is adorable. Well, here's a piston nugget. Here's a piston nugget. Just mutilated beyond recognition. Obviously, the head on that particular cylinder, the combustion chamber, just completely destroyed. When we look at some of the valves, he pulled out one of the valves, and I mean, it wasn't just bent. It had like this weird kinked S shape to it.
Yes.
It's like, how the hell did that happen? Well, I mean, you know how it happened, but how did it happen? It's
right. We're looking at the bottom of the oil pan here, and it's just hunks of metal. There's just nothing left. And the fascinating thing is, you know, at the end of his videos, he generally tries to say, oh, here's what I think happened. And he's not entirely sure in this case. He doesn't think it was an oil starvation issue. He doesn't think it jumped timing, because if it had jumped timing, then it wouldn't just be one piston that exploded. There would be, you know, one on the other side, theoretically, that would have a similar amount of damage.
Right.
We're not quite sure what happened here, but things went catastrophically wrong.
Well, a little bit of background. This engine was sent to him, he said, by a person in Holland, Michigan, that had purchased this truck at an auction, and the engine had a fairly loud ticking noise when he got it. It was running at that point. And the buyer took it apart, thought it might be like cam phasers or something on the engine. He changed some parts, put it back together. Didn't fix the ticking sound. And I want to point out there is a portion in the video where he shares this ticking sound before it blew apart.
Yes.
And it was, I mean, it wasn't like if you know engines at all, every now and again, you'll hear just like a little, you know, as this was like, I mean, it was loud. And exactly when it completely let go, I don't think it was really known whether it was just idling or under throttle, but it let go catastrophically. And he said that it still ran even after that explosion. I'm sure it didn't sound great.
Right. From what he said is that basically the driver didn't shut it down immediately. So it did. It ran long enough for, I think he said it, the guy was able to drive it onto a flatbed or something like that. But after
but still. Yeah.
Yeah. So it which is just shocking when you look at this engine and you see like it ran kinda. It's not as if like, oh, I could drive this to the next town over. You could drive it onto a flatbed and that was kind of that.
Yeah, but that engine is still probably turning 800, 1,000 RPMs.
Sure.
With one piston and rod just completely gone, or maybe part of it at that point is still connected to the camshaft or the crankshaft spinning around. He did, I think if I remember correctly, he mentioned he took the oil pump and everything. I mean, he takes everything apart. He doesn't just like pull the big stuff off, but he takes it. He even takes the oil filter off and cuts into the oil filter to examine the material in the filter to take a look. And he theorizes that a lot of what he calls the forbidden glitter of little tiny metallic particles, he theorizes that those went into the system after the engine catastrophically blew. He doesn't think it went in beforehand. One thing that I do want to point out or at least mention and bring up to folks, I want to stress, I am not a professional mechanic. I've torn down a couple engines. I've done a fair amount of mechanical work on other engines. He points out that the cam lobes on this were showing just a lot of wear. This is a double overhead cam engine. It uses bucket tappets. Basically, the cam lobes spin around. They push on tappets in these little buckets. And then that operates the valves below them. And he observed quite a bit of wear on those buckets as well, which is kind of odd. And when I was watching the video, the thing that really stuck out to me was just a lot of what I call staining, just sort of like a brown kind of staining that in the work that I've done, which again is not anywhere near what he has done, that's usually been a sign of, okay, maybe they haven't been running the greatest quality oil. I'm just tossing that out there just based on what I've seen in the past. A lot of the engines that I've opened up that have had sort of that varnishy look, it's like, hey, well, you know, they're just running just the lowest common denominator for oil. I'm a stickler on running higher quality oils. There are some that I've seen that seem to just do a little bit better than others. So, I mean, we're looking at the head here right now. The head looks bronze inside, which to me is like, ooh, okay, that's not supposed to have a bronze look. So, is it could oil have been a factor in here? Don't know. And I do cars. I mean, he doesn't have a specific answer either. That certainly stood out to me in this video.
But now we're looking at the valves coming out of the really bad piston. And as you said, they're S-shaped. It's beyond bent. Like, there are bent valves, and then there's whatever the hell this is.
Yeah, it went through some carnage. That's definitely destruction on a level we haven't seen in these videos yet. At least we've been covering.
Yeah, and he mentions in the video, basically the only... So, what I do car, like, this is not his primary job. He sells and recycles engine components, whether, you know, and he's like, out of this engine, I can sell the valve covers and the oil pan, and everything else is junk.
Basically. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, there's nothing, there's nothing else to save here.
Because you couldn't sell those valves, like, there's nothing left.
Hey, like he says at the end of the video, if anybody wants any cool desk ornaments,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I have a piston and a valve behind me. Could be kind of a neat thing, but yeah.
Sure.
Another good video from I Do Cars. Just going to share some of the comments here. Eric Nefron, it's like a forensics exercise.
It is.
That's legit. That's legit. I would really love to know specifically what caused this failure. There are so many different things. I mean, he points out in the video, the engine could have had a tune, doesn't know. There's unfortunately a lot that we don't know. Group FBC, this isn't an engine teardown. This is an archaeological dig. You know, I've been on some paleontological digs. You're not entirely incorrect. My wife was going to grad school for paleontology in 2005, and I got to spend a summer with her doing some grad work in the Dakota Badlands. So literally finding bits and pieces, we would call them explodosaurus, because you would get to a point where there's just little tiny bone fragments coming out of a butte or an area, and it's like, we have no idea what dinosaur this comes from. So explodosaurus, that oil pan, not that far from some of the things that we saw. So yeah, that's a rather astute observation there.
Huh. I did not know. That's very cool. Moving on, this is kind of going to be just a quick hit thing, if I'm honest, but I thought it was worth bringing up. And I am talking like this because I accidentally deleted my tab.
That's my fault. I didn't have a catchy, segue for this one here. Speaking of catastrophic fit, that's a terrible segue for this one. That doesn't go good. Speaking of direction changes, maybe some unexpected direction changes. We learned this week that General Motors will not be advertising during this year's big game. I don't know if we're allowed to say
the SB word.
They're really funny about that sometimes, but yeah. General Motors will not be advertising during the upcoming Super Bowl, the big game. There wasn't a specific reason why. We did reach out to their team just to see, okay, is there something else going on? Is there a specific reason? It's just, hey, sometimes we adjust our marketing cycles to best fit the current situation, best fit, the direction that we're taking. So no real reason was given, but it did come as a little bit of a surprise because they've been a staple for the commercials for the game for the last, I think, three years, 21, 22, and then earlier this year, 23.
Just in general, but yeah, they have been kind of a big staple. They have been promoting their EVs there. They did the ad with Will Ferrell, where he went to Sweden or Norway or something.
They've done multiple things with Will Ferrell.
Yeah. They did with Mike Myers, where he was playing Dr. Evil.
The Dr. Evil spoof.
It's, they have been kind of a big player of promoting their EVs there. So it's just, again, this is going to be a quick hit, but it's fascinating to know that they are not going to spend that money to be there this year, that, for whatever reason, they don't feel as though it's worthwhile. And that's interesting.
And I mean, I want to stress again, there's no official statement regarding why or why not this decision is being made. But I did just make some points in the feature here. According to Forbes, last year for Super Bowl, for the 2023 Super Bowl is 57, I think we're at 58 now. I think last year Super Bowl 57. The average price for a 30-second commercial during Super Bowl 57, $7 million for 30 seconds.
I mean, that's had a lot of money, though.
Yes.
Well, okay. Yes.
$7 million for a 30-second commercial. Honestly, in the age of the internet, where you can throw something on YouTube for the cost of paying your 12-year-old son or daughter to upload it to YouTube for you, it's pricey. Obviously, you're reaching a huge audience. There's no question about that. And a lot of times, you see significant effort go into these. This isn't just Bob Donna Bob's used cars with the wacky wavy and flailing tube man. I can't remember how that spiel goes.
Aaron makes a fantastic point. Add in production costs, which I did not consider when I first said, Will Ferrell is not going to do these ads for free. Mike Myers
is
doing these ads. You're paying the talent, you're paying the production staff, you're paying.
I said that as well. And last year, Forbes said the average cost was $7 million. Of course, we have no idea what General Motors paid last year, but they had a 60-second commercial.
Right.
And then you have, the production cost in creating this, because last year's commercial, they actually did it with Netflix. So they were promoting various shows and programs. Our lead image is the GMC Sierra EV driving through a post-apocalyptic land being chased by zombies. So I'm sure they didn't actually find a busted up city with zombies to chase. So I'm sure that's all nice, neat CGI that's going to cost quite a bit of money. You have to pay the stars to be in the program, which is going to be quite a bit of money. And if you go by
Stranger Things, they got people from Bridgerton. Yeah. You're right. I hadn't thought about all of that. None of those people are working for free. So,
and then you have the production costs to put all this together to see, the CGI, the special effect, all of that stuff. And if you go by Forbes' average price of $7 million for 30 seconds, there's $14 million right there if you're just going by Forbes' average price. So it can get expensive in a hurry. And when you just signed a contract after, a six-week strike that cost a lot of money? But I want to point out, because I also mentioned this in the article, I think it was 2020 or 2021. I think it was 2020, if memory serves. Jeep came out of nowhere like 2 or 3 days before the Super Bowl saying, hey, we're going to have a Jeep commercial. And it was a spoof of Groundhog Day with Bill Murray and a lot of the original cast members. That came together, if I remember correctly, 3 weeks before the game.
Okay.
Bill Murray and Jeep, they made contact at that point. So 3 weeks it went from, hey, let's do this, to here's a commercial. So, we'll see what's in store for the big game.
That's a very good thing to point out. Yeah.
And with that, I think it's Cheap Car Challenge time. But before we jump to Cheap Car Challenge time, I want to remind all of the ramblers out there, email us podcast@motorone.com. I say that because, one, we'd love to get your emails. We'd love to see what you have going on in your life. We want to share some of your automotive adventures. If you want to share those with the other ramblers out there, we love to carry that along. We did get an email last week from Lee. Thanks much for sending this in. I'm going to read through this really quick. Happy Thanksgiving from Louisiana. I've just finished up the most recent podcast, though a bit late. Here are a few cheap car challenge ideas and a bit of feedback on things that you were looking for. I want to mention again to everybody out there, we are looking at making some changes, making things bigger, better, faster, stronger, all the good stuff starting here early next year. So anything that you like about the podcast, anything that you don't like about the podcast.
Like, I'm happy.
Anything you want to see differently, something that you haven't seen before, email that into us. Email us all of those suggestions, podcast@motorone.com. And we also asked last week, since we're coming up to Thanksgiving in the United States, which is tomorrow. We said, Ramblers, give us some ideas on what you want to see for a cheap card challenge. Give us a cheap card challenge. And that's what Lee did here. We did get a few others. And I want to thank everybody for commenting. I think it was it Ted Adam Green that said, hey, you should do a right-hand drive cheap card challenge. Bruce, we're going to have to do that one in the future.
We'll do that one in the future. But this one, it just works so well for Thanksgiving. We kind of had to do it.
Yep. So Lee says, Thanksgiving-related cheap car challenge, best road trip car that is also roadworthy, as much as you can tell from an ad, for a 500-mile round trip, $3,000 or less. So that's going to be the cheap car challenge for tonight. And let me just go ahead and read through the rest of the email here pretty quick. A bit of feedback on different things. First, you're both doing great. Oh, well, thank you very much. The transition into live has gotten pretty smooth and good, even though I listen to these podcasts as audio only. We love our audio listeners. Please keep listening. We'll do our best to describe everything that we see on the videos. And if you get a chance, jump over to MotorOne.com, where you can, or MotorOne on YouTube as well, where you can see what we're talking about. I like the way you're able to verbalize the images or videos. The engine teardown segments are done really well as an example of that. I give all that credit to Bruce.
We try very hard to do that.
As a mechanical engineer, I can actually tell what's going on even without the video in front of me. That's huge. Thank you so much for saying that. It makes me feel a little bit better when I talk about complete mechanical carnage. Second, the camper conversation trailer pieces are interesting. I'm not sure I'd add more, but the occasional discussions are fun. Well noted. I've got an old trailer that I've restored, so I appreciate them. Third, maybe some ideas of things to add. You're all pretty tuned into what's going on in the industry. Hopefully, I think we do all right, Bruce. It might be nice to have an occasional discussion on why things are going on. And that's a good point. I like that.
Yeah.
Why are EV sales seemingly slowing, for example? There are other trends too, but you've both got background and perspective to make some pieces that like that, a nice addition from time to time. Guests are always welcome too. You've had some good ones for sure. We're going to have some good ones coming up as well. So stay tuned on that. Lee, thank you very much for sending in this email. I know you sent us in a picture of your Suburban. Let's touch on that here with a future episode. Cause I know we're getting a little bit later here right now. Bruce, did you have anything else you wanted to plug in here before we jump into the challenge?
Nope. I think those are all incredibly good points. I think those are all things we could easily do, especially just throw in a segment. Hell, even if it's once a month where, you know, we kind of talk about, you know, kind of just a greater overview of how you and I see the industry. I think that's a really good point. I think that's easily something we could do because I know you and I definitely have opinions and feelings on that. So,
the feedback is welcome. And if you have any, again, podcast@motorone.com, send it our way. Let us know what you would like to see.
Yep.
Now, Bruce, what I want to see, because we were talking about this before we started recording, this one was kind of difficult. Yeah.
This one was really difficult, like $3,000 these days. And it's funny to say that because, you know, the first car I ever owned cost $1,000. So, you know, when I say talk about, we set a limit, or Lee, I guess, set a limit for us of $3,000. That feels like, oh, you should be able to find an interesting car for that amount of money. But then when you add in, okay, it's got to be able to haul a family, which to me said it had to, you had to be able to fit five people in there. Even if on one of mine, you're going to have to you know, be close to each other, but it'll fit. And then drive 500 miles. Like it, you're getting into some pretty tough territory there.
The second one is what hung me up because I can find $2,000 cars all day long. I could find $2,000 cars all day long that I would be fine just driving locally, you know, 20, 30 miles around the house.
Yep. Same.
Jumping on a 500-mile trip with maybe just a quick inspection or if you have to, just a small little thing here or there, like the belts are squealing a little bit. Okay, well, change a belt easily enough.
And we're not talking about, like, you can stop at the gas station and get, like, that's not what we're saying. But it has to be safe to drive 500 miles. Like, that's a – Lee, I love you, buddy. You gave us a hell of a challenge here.
It's a good challenge. I feel pretty good, though, about what I have. I'm going to
feel pretty good about what I have. So
why don't you lead us off and show everybody and to our audio listeners, of course, we'll tell you what's going on.
Absolutely.
Set me up for failure, because when you say, oh, I don't think I did this very well, that's usually when I get egg on my face. Okay. Right.
So I have two cars. I'll do one first. You go, but I have two cars here. Let me get present up here. So I found a 2005 Scion XB. It's got 220,000 miles on it, but it's a Scion, which means it's a Toyota. So that doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
A bit. Yep. It's got the manual gearbox. It's big and boxy. So, you know, headroom is not going to be an issue whatsoever. You could, and also, okay, maybe not five people. Five people are going to be kind of crammed in here.
They might be a little tight.
Four people, you'll be just fine.
Well, there's a bench in the back.
There's a bench in the back. I'm just saying, like,
provisions for three seat belts.
Yes, you can fit five people. You're going to have to be family or intimate to want to be in the back.
Yeah, but I guess that's the question. Would you want to go 500 miles, three abreast in that seat?
No, you probably wouldn't. I don't think you would. But it looks like a very good car. Like, if you look at the engine here, I don't see, there's nothing here that scares me. It's a car that is famously has, you know, it's going to be reliable. It's going to have great headroom. It's, you know, it's going to do a lot of things really well. And it's $2,900. So it's $100 less than our price point. Like I said, this was a really, really hard challenge for me. And I don't think I did that bad. Commenters, let me know. Like, am I really wrong here?
Well, I mean, it's, you have provisions for five people and a little bit of stuff then behind them. Not much. A little bit of stuff behind them. And it's a manual. So when you aren't just trucking down the highway, clocking the miles, you can go and find some roads and shift some gears and feel like you're having a little bit of fun. I can appreciate that. I mean, it's not, I'll be honest, it's not jumping out at me and saying, hey, this is going to be an absolute riot of a trip, but
sure.
It meets the challenge.
The last time you saw a Scion XB on the road, a first gen, the second gen, I still see occasionally. The first gens, that's to me what made this, what qualified to me as interesting, because it's not a vehicle that I see all the time.
Is that the normal Scion XB steering wheel? I guess I've never really seen.
That is not. No,
the interior. Yeah, I was gonna say that looks like a GT style steering wheel.
Yes.
Okay, but so don't hit anything because there's no airbag there.
Come on, Smith, man. I did my
the rest of the family will be safe.
It's not a lot of money to spend on a car these days. Like, I did my best.
Well, Bruce, you have to think out of the box. Now, okay,
then it's your turn, man. Let's see what you got.
I did think out of the box a little bit here on this. I do have a few choices we can go through, but I was out of the box on this first one. We have $3,000 to spend, right? Does that mean we have to buy it or just spend $3,000?
What the hell did you find?
This is a 2003 Chevrolet van. It looks like it was a shuttle bus at one point.
It looks like it was a party bus.
I mean, party bus.
That's a
might be an exaggeration.
Stripper pole in the back.
That's not a stripper pole. That is not. No, hey, that there's plenty of seating in the back for people. That's a pole like you get on like a public bus or a subway, where if you want to stand up, you hold onto the pole for safety. There, it's got a nice stereo back there. It has a TV. You could rent this for $200 non-refundable deposit and $125 per hour. I can rent this on a 500-mile trip, get everybody there in comfort and style with some smiles on their faces for well under $3,000.
Yeah, smiles on their faces from the stripper pole.
That's not a stripper. Oh my God, that's just You've been on public transportation at some point, right? You know, but especially like the city buses. That's like one of those poles that you hold on to while you're standing up.
Then why is the roof mirrored?
As Ted Adam Green says, the pole is for safety. Thank you. Somebody understands me. Somebody understands me here. Those aren't mirrors. Are they mirrors? I don't think they're mirrors.
The roof is mirrored.
But I mean, you have a nice pass through to the front. Okay. Where you can sit. There's another screen up there. No, those aren't mirrors. Those are okay. Maybe they are mirrors. But there's nice lighting in there. There's a television up front. Obviously there's plenty of entertainment. They were very, very thought conscious on this. There are nice little fans mounted in the corner to help circulate the air in the back, just keep people nice and comfortable. Black bus. I think this is kind of brilliant.
Okay, I will give you that technically it checks all the boxes. You're right. We never said you have to own it for $3,000. You just have to get it for
in Grand Rapids, where I was just a few weeks ago. I could have left the Subaru down there, rented this sucker, and brought this sucker back home.
Smith, I'm going to ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
Would you be comfortable letting your mother ride in the back of this?
What else did you get, Bruce? As long as that pole is secure so she can hold on to something when she gets in and out, that's fine.
Okay. Okay. All right, man. All right. Yeah.
That's fine. Safety conscious. There's no airbag. Smith chooses this. Thank you, Group FBC. And also, oh, hell no, so many transmittables. Guys, come on.
Also, Ted Adam Green has the greatest thing. I wouldn't get on that bus wearing a full hazmat.
It checks the boxes. Comfortable, under $3,000, lots of room for the family. And think about how many smiles will be on people's faces when you arrive for the special dinner.
And that's true. Just hope no one brings a black light.
And that's what That's what the holidays are all about.
Okay.
I think that's brilliant.
I can't fight with you because my other choice is really boring. I'll be honest with you. This is boring. Finding a $3,000 car that is safely drivable, that could fit five people in total, is hard, especially right now. So I did my best, and I understand everyone's going to say ho-hum here, but it checks all the boxes. I found a 2025 Acura TL.
It's got 2005.
2-liter V6. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. I misspoke. The 2005 Acura TL. It's got the 3.2-liter V6. It's fine. And that's what I can say about it. Is it exciting? No. Is it interesting? You know, it's semi-premium. It's a really nice Accord, essentially. It's, you know, I gotta be honest with you, it's a really nice Accord. And
I mean, I was always a fan of the 3.2. I think it's a nice car.
No, it'll
eat up the miles. It'll be enjoyable to drive if you get into a situation where you can have a little bit of fun.
It's not as interesting as your stripper van.
Like, oh my God, that wasn't a stripper pole. That's all I'm going to say.
Our entire audience disagrees with you.
They didn't see it in the same manner. But wait, we're talking about the Acura.
Yeah, it's.
Would your mother be comfortable in the back of that Acura, Bruce?
Of course she would be. She'd be fine.
Okay.
She would be. Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't have a mirrored ceiling. It doesn't have a pole to support someone standing in the back of the van.
Exactly. Exactly. There's nothing really to hold on to back there. If you, behind the driver's seat, get up to some shenanigans. Ted Adam Green says, Bruce is winner of the It's Fine Cheap Car Challenge.
And I know, like, we try to find interesting vehicles for this. So our challenge was it also had to be drivable. And I found some vehicles that were more interesting, but were not drivable. I found like an 87, 88 Cadillac Fleetwood that would, you know, arrive in style, but it needed a bunch of work. Like I found other vehicles, like it's hard, you know?
And to be fair, this is also a challenge where you really need to shop the seller as much as the car. You can look right at this and see the ad that says, hey, it needs nothing. And then as you're talking to the seller, you learn, oh, yeah, I just bought this a month or so ago at a local auction. And it looked pretty decent. And I vacuumed it up and it looks pretty nice. And, you know, where we go. And then you take it for a drive and, okay, there's no lights on, but the steering feels a little strange. The brake pedal feels a little soft and you've only had it for a month. What don't I know about at this point? So sure. definitely a tough challenge. I got to say this, Bruce. Group okay. FPC says I generally like that Acura. So do I. It checks fine. All the boxes. It checks all the boxes. It gets the job done. And it does it with a little bit of style. So I will give you...
Also, it's unfortunate. Group FPC, I'm looking forward to Smith's backup choice, a van used for hauling medical waste.
Wow.
Did you come up with a backup choice?
Yes, I have several choices. In fact...
Is it a van used for hauling medical waste?
I don't think so. I almost went with a BMW 5 Series wagon that had a roll cage welded into it. The back seat was still in place.
Going to be safe.
It was rusty. It was saying, yeah, it overheats, but it's in the shop now getting a new water pump and thermostat and stuff on it. It's like, oh, that's not going to go. Here's my second choice that I will present. Okay. As I bring this up, I want to say when I embarked on this challenge, it wasn't part of the rules, but I didn't want to pick an SUV because I felt like I can go get a Ford Explorer, like an early 2000s Ford Explorer or something for $3,000 that would probably be fine. There's just so many things out there. And it's just like, to me, that's just not the spirit of Cheap Car Challenge. I wanted to try to find something to get the job done, but still be interesting.
Interesting is part of the Cheap Car Challenge thing. That it's like exactly what you said. You could find an Explorer. You could find their umpteen, a Chevy Traverse or something like that. Those vehicles are out there. But we want to find an interesting vehicle, even like I know at least the Acura, it's a premium vehicle, or at least it was at the time. Or sometimes you find a stripper van.
I was about to say, and you have to go there again. My converted shuttle bus for the safety rental transportation, I thought was a kind of a brilliant step outside the box.
I agree with you. I think it's a good choice.
I'm sad that everybody seems to think it's a party bus. I don't know where that idea comes from. This is my second choice. I was specifically looking for one of these, and I was able to find actually quite a few. And in fact, this is a vehicle that I've sort of coveted for a while that I would just like to have. This is a 2010 Mazda 5. And if you're unfamiliar, Mazda 5 is a minivan. But
they were a compact minivan. It's unlike any other vehicle at the time.
Right. It's a rather compact minivan that has sort of a crossover vibe, but it still has sliding doors on both sides. More importantly, you could get them with a manual transmission. And this one has a manual transmission. It's a 2010 Mazda 5. It's driven 200,000 miles. The description says automatic transmission, but when you look at the photos, that's clearly a manual. And when you look in the description here, this is what sold me. Nice running 5-speed, 4-cylinder. These do have 3-row seating. It's not 7 passengers. It's going to be 6 passengers. So you'll have 2 seats in the front, 2 seats in the middle, 2 seats in the back. So I figured that should be pretty comfortable for, even though it's a smaller van, should be pretty comfortable for 5 adults all total on a longer trip. I have $10,000 in this car, including new clutch, new front and back axle, new rotors, new brakes, new battery, new starter, new front and rear wipers. It does say the air conditioning needs charged in Michigan. I'm not using the air conditioning for Thanksgiving anyways. And it needs an intake runner sensor. Now, this almost held me up because it's like, okay, is this thing not going to be running good at all? The ad says it's an easy fix. I actually took a little bit of time, looked it up. These sensors are running about $50. They sit right there on top of the intake. They're are legitimately an easy fix. Why it hasn't been done on this one, though, I don't know. It's like, if it's an easy fix,
selling it, then maybe they just don't want to. But yeah,
I mean, I've been there as well. But when I see this list, okay, they've had a lot of work done. It's got 200,000 miles, but I mean, it's a 2010. It looks like it's in pretty good shape. The seat covers, man, it's got what is that, like magenta and black seat covers with a matching steering wheel cover. That's a bit much. But I mean, they pull the seat covers off on the back ones at least, and the seats look all right. Yeah. So, I mean, you've got the second row there. The seat covers are a bit much. You got the sliding doors. It's got the sporty look, manual transmission. It is the four cylinder. It's Mazda's four cylinder. So, I mean, it's not a racing machine, but it's kind of sporty and it's got room for everybody.
I don't think I knew you could get those with the manual. That's interesting. That's gotta be. It's one of the, I know early on with the Dodge Caravan, like the 80s version, you could get those with the manual, but there's a short list of minivans available with a manual in the United States. So it's interesting. Yeah, I think that's a good choice. Agreed. Six passenger seating, you know, you put whoever drank too much, you put them way in the back so they can stink up the back seat and you drive. Like
I found a second one too, because that's the later facelifted model. I actually prefer the earlier ones, and I found one from 2006 that was leather and had heated seats and all of that. But it had some other mechanical issues that had me questioning things a little bit further. So yeah, I decided to go with that one. Group FBC points out this is a shockingly solid choice. My only concern, how much room is there in the rear? Can you fit a safety hole? I appreciate that observation. I think in these, there are some pretty good grab handles on the side. I wouldn't be quite as concerned about the safety pole. But if you fold down those back seats, I'm willing to bet you could get at least a small pole in there.
You could, yeah. You know, you could. I have a bunch of comments I want to say, but none of them are safe for work, so I'm not going to say them.
That'll have to be in the director's cut episode. Bruce, did you have any others that you wanted to mention?
I found those too. Like I said, $3,000 for a drivable car that could fit five people. That was interesting. That's a tall order these days, and so
it is. It is. What I found. I will say I found quite a few conversion vans. Like 90s era conversion vans that may have fit the bill. To me that almost seemed kind of like the SUV has the obvious choice. I will share this one. Consider it an alternate.
It was a van with like some like, you know, scene from like a fantasy novel airbrushed. It's an 850 turbo wagon.
I did find
reliable as hell, but cool as hell.
I know. I did find this 95 Volvo 850 turbo wagon. I felt like, okay, a Thanksgiving cheap car challenge. There has to be a Volvo wagon in there somewhere. And I found this one. It's over in Illinois, and I wouldn't pick it because it sounds like it might have some issues. The ad says it needs new rear brakes. I mean, you could drive it for 500 miles. But
I had a professor in college who had essentially the clone of that, and he tried to sell it to me several times because it was so unreliable for him.
This ad does say previously had one other owner, no joke, a little old lady that kept him, and I say him in quotes because they've named this car Herb. Which I found rather endearing. The ad says, let me just read the ad here. Sure. Herb needs a new home. Runs well. Turbo will eventually need tuned. You don't really tune a turbo. The exterior is rust-free, few paint chips on the front grill area, interior clean, headliner has been removed. Okay.
Shows
clean fiberglass shell inside. Needs new rear brakes. Previously had one other owner, no joke, a little old lady that kept him in garage in Florida. He was sold to our family and our kids used him as a college car. He was named Herb because he reminded one of them of Herbie the Volkswagen. 169,000 miles.
That's a lot.
Five-cylinder automatic. $2,500. Would it make it a 500 mile trip?
I think it would, but maybe not much more.
When you see, okay, the turbo needs tuned. Okay. But it's Herb. You've got to trust something named Herb, right?
You got to trust a Herb. Like I said, yeah.
I had to share that one. That wasn't an official pick, but.
Okay.
Too endearing otherwise.
I think that's our show for tonight, right? Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I mean, we went through all the lists. Just another reminder to all the ramblers out there. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to see, something that we don't do right now. Hey, do you have other ideas like completely different from rambling about cars that you might like to see Bruce and I work on, or even somebody else at Motor One? We have some plans to try to expand the whole video segment that we're doing. So email us, podcast@motorone.com. Tell us what you would like to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for anyone out there, any listeners, we have pretty sure this is kind of firmly established, not 100%. Things can change. That's just life. But we should have a guest next week to talk about some cool old Hondas. And then yes, we've got some guests in December to talk about some Radwood stuff.
Returning guest, exactly.
That'll be a fun time. Otherwise, for anyone in the United States and who, I guess, celebrates the holiday, who doesn't like to eat? Thanksgiving is just an excuse to like be a glutton and eat and drink as much as you can. I have
about an hour's worth of baking once we wrap up the podcast.
Yeah. So if you celebrate that, and I kind of guess I hope you do, because it's not religious, it's not patriotic, it's just be a glutton day.
give thanks for everything that you have in your life.
Exactly. So for anyone out there, I hope you guys have a good Thanksgiving, because that'll be tomorrow, and we will be back next week. And like I said, we've got some guests and stuff lined up, so it'll be a fun show. But otherwise, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. We love all of our listeners. We love that you spend time with us. We love that, you find time to listen to us. So it's just fantastic. So thank you everyone out there. And I think that we're going to shut down the show for tonight. And for our audio listeners, this will be up on Friday. So bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. We'll see you.